Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
So I feel like our podcast is doing really great.
I would agree.
Our numbers, our conversations, our guests, all great.
All great.
Everything has been above board.
Yeah.
And nothing can stop that momentum.
Great. Fantastic.
Except that I have jury duty starting on Thursday.
So what does that mean?
It means that I might be gone for a while. Well, I'm serving our country.
My experience was when I went down there, they ask you what you do for a living, and I said, I am a hip-hop sketch comedian, and they said, what is that? And I had to describe that we do music, that we do TV, that we do writing, that we do interviews, that we do podcasts, and that was not attractive to them. They were like, wait.
That's how you get off of a jury pool.
Yeah, they were like, no. And so I said, okay, bye. And I came home.
Well, I mean, but what is it about a hip-hop sketch comedian that, like, they're not into?
Well, for the lawyers that day, it was the podcasting. They didn't want me to go home and talk about things that may have come up in court like this in the intro of a podcast.
You should have told them, hey, guys, first of all, subscribe on iTunes.
Yes.
You can also find our podcast at soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. Yeah. You can also go to Stitcher or any other streaming service.
I really should have, one by one.
Yeah, well, it's a captive audience.
Ma'am, what do you use?
Yeah, what is your iOS? What is your preferred method of listening to podcasts?
But for you...
For me.
You're not totally against the idea of serving your fellow man.
Well, I think it's a stretch to say that we would talk about a case on here. One, we are no snitches.
There you go.
And two, what I want to do is I want to serve, and I want to, if somebody is going to be on trial, I want to, you know, be a good juror.
Of course. Just like if you were on trial, you would hope that the jury was full of 12 and then whatever, however many alternates of good people with good moral standing and
intentions. I don't need to go that far. I just need people who are my peers.
Oh, well... Well, peers could be anybody. It could be like the weird cat lady who shows up. And you know there's a strange collection of people that you'll be talking about on next week's podcast should you get thrown out of that jury pool.
Oh, so I should do it for the story.
I think you should do it for the fact that we have coming on the podcast. So today on the podcast, it's already been pre-recorded, so it doesn't matter for you, for the jury, for the judge, and whoever is on the trial for their life.
Yeah, well, honestly, even if I am on this jury pool for the next, like, 3 years...
Yeah.
We can still get Dan on.
Dan. A lot of Dan fans out there.
Or like a Peter Rosenberg.
Yeah, just whoever. Just another Jew.
Just get an Upper West Sider and just stick him in my seat and have him make puns every once in a while.
There you go. Today on the podcast, Jeff, we have our friend Jamal Jamot.
We have Jamal Jamot.
Jamal, who is now working at E1, the record company, used to work for Nick Cannon. Before that, worked for Island Def Jam. Before that, worked for a hospital, I think. Before that, was
he was at The Source?
He was at thesource.com.
Yeah.
Let's be fair. Before that, went to college at 16 years old. Before that, was kicked out of high school for stupid reasons. Before that, was kicked out of like a gifted and talented program for stupid reasons. Anyway, there's a lot to go over. Not to mention, Jamal is one of the funniest people that we know in real life and on Twitter.
And also one of the best people we know.
What
and
a
it
decent
is,
guy.
It is an honor. It is a pleasure to have him up here.
Oh, you're just being nice because?
Because we screwed it up the first time. He was like episode like 2 or 3 or
something like that.
And we screwed it up.
Well, you know, he's back.
Yeah.
And he has more of a story to tell right now. He was on here when he was 16 years old.
Yeah.
You know, way back then. Anyway, guys, great episode today with Jamal. Shout out to him. Always great talking with him. And if you can't get enough of Jamal today, there's like 4 or 5 other episodes that he's been on. So check those out as well. Jeff, when do you want to get into this?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Newton's Apple, a.k.a. Retro Drop.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. 15-Minute Lover, a.k.a. Stovetop Stuffer.
My turn. Yo, what up? It's Jamal, aka Designer Haircut, aka Gucci Mane.
yeah, someone
show
came
love,
from
people. Show love.
Yeah, this is a waste of time, but this is the real. Pew
pew pew.
Jamal, welcome back. You now,
family.
You
family,
now family, are family. The most tenured person on this podcast.
I've been here multiple times. I've appeared in front of the mic 3 times, this being my 4th time.
Welcome back.
One time got cut, and well, I might let that be the driver. I might just tell other parts of people's stories.
You like, have a chip on your shoulder.
I might bring a bit of Diani with me. I might speak a little bit of Haitian Creole. Shout out to Wass and Nod. I don't know. I might be Kaz and talk about how luxurious my mohawk is.
Wow.
I gotta figure out what parts of other people's stories I'm going to adopt and tell as my own. so that this one doesn't get left on the cutting room floor. To be fair, Jeff was very gentle, though.
The ratchet.
I was like, hey, so my episode is never going to happen, guys. And Jeff's like, man, I feel, but I understand. But he was like, he was really gentle about it. And I was like,
your stories were whack and nobody wants to
hear it. Yeah, no, I was like, I get it.
Anybody could get it today.
I'm letting that thing fly.
How are you?
Fly. My taxes are paid. I'm good, man.
Your taxes are paid.
I'm in a good place.
In case anyone from the government's listening, just
come and see me.
For the record.
Come and see me.
You save your receipts.
Like a motherfucker. And my accountant has doubles.
Where do we start?
I don't know.
It's up to you.
I feel like I've witnessed a great deal of your cross country tour. I might pop up in Ohio.
All right, looking forward to that.
But I've popped up in multiple cities.
No, you know what? It's you never know who's going to be in an audience except for Jamal.
Yeah, no, I'm usually
and
there.
I want to say, like, how much we appreciate that you were at our LA show.
Sure was.
With our friend Abigail.
Yep.
And also Derek.
Shout out to Derek.
I'd like to start right there, which is that you and Abigail went to high school together.
Bang, bang.
But
middle school and high school.
You guys are not the most famous alumna from your high school.
Nah, there's better than us.
And I feel like that's where we should start, because since we've had you on...
We have to talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda.
We have to talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I thought we were going to talk about Immortal Technique, because we've got, like, if we're going to shout them out, let's shout them all out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay. Shout out to Immortal Technique, my guy.
Right.
Who I last saw when I was coming out of a dermatologist's office in Chinatown.
Is that right?
Shouts at me from down the block. Yo, Maul! And I turned around, I was like, oh shit, it's you.
Did he try and shove you in a garbage can the way he did to Lin-Manuel?
High school and Lin, I love Lin. I love Lin's wife, Vanessa. They're both beautiful people. Lin a year before me, Vanessa a year after me. Everybody got bullied in high school. And some people did bullying in high school as well. I was a dick.
Yeah.
But I also got into my fair share and lost, you know, more than, like, I lost a couple of fights too. But, like, everybody got bullied. That's a part of it. I never got bullied. Like, it happened that Tech and I were, like, we were cool. But, like,
right.
I don't know, man. Wait, that's part of the high school
experience.
Everybody
got bullied except for you and Immortal Technique, and that was it?
No. I'm sure he got bullied. But at that point, he was the upperclassman. Like, right. When you're...
No one got bullied.
Yeah, right, no. Yeah. Oh, I got fucked with. Absolutely. But I was a fat black kid from Rockaway, and I was also funny as shit, so I made fun of people a lot.
Right.
So I did a lot of the bullying.
Did you see it?
Emotional. At this point, they call it emotional bullying, or I'd be a cyber bully. Like, when we first had Instant Messenger, I was in the computer lab, and I was making fun of this kid constantly with a name that I called him in class, and I would send, like, broadcast messages. So I think I might have invented cyberbullying.
I didn't realize that.
Hey,
yeah, shout out to me. I could have been president.
That's
going to
be the lead line in the bio on this podcast.
There might still be time.
Did you see it for Lin-Manuel? Did you call him Lin-Man?
The couple of times, like, I auditioned for musical rep, got into musical rep, and it was a play that he was, like, pretty high up on, and I didn't do it because academic ineligibility, which, you know, yeah. Shout out. To be fair, Hunter's academic ineligibility is, like, you have, like, a B average.
Oh, that's a real thing?
Oh, yeah, no, you can actually be academically ineligible. I didn't go to class. Once I found out how to skip class, fuck you.
Where did you go when you skipped class?
To the courtyard, like a dick. Like, yeah. I would be hanging out.
Right, find
like,
me.
Yeah, one day my art teacher, who I was sure was a neo-Nazi with this ridiculous long braid, came outside. She's like, so you're just not going to go? It's like, how'd you know I was here? And I'm like, sitting on the steps, I look up. I was like, oh, that's right. There's a mirror right from your hallway down to where I am.
Yeah.
And maybe I should have switched locales.
You had some guts.
I got a little bit smarter about it. I had some guts or some stupidity.
See, Abigail would go to the Mets games and she would smoke, you know, in the upper deck.
Yes. No, Abigail had it smarter than I did. I mean, at some point we discovered the little courtyard. Sorry for all the Hunter kids who are still trying to cut class. They know now.
And Hunter is an actual jail. Like, it's shaped like a jail.
It's a brick prison.
Yeah.
That's the affectionate name. But yeah, it's like it's a stronghold. It's a way to keep the bad out, I guess.
Did you ever think Lin-Manuel Miranda was going to go to the White House, become, like, celebrated by,
No. I never saw him like that. I was like, oh, man, he's going to write some amazing fucking jingles one
right.
day. Like, yeah. I was like, you know, he's going to live his dream and that be it. Never thought he would A, marry Vanessa.
Okay.
Or, you know, B, end up as, like, the leader of the musical world.
Right.
Or the musical repertory world. Okay, because he's not, like...
Did you have your money on someone else?
Yeah, it was going to be Jamal, but his academic ineligibility...
Yeah, it was me initially. I had my money on this couple of white girls in my class who were always singing and dancing and twirling around.
Where are they today? Are they Facebook friends?
Oh, they're, like, school teachers. No, not there's anything wrong with teaching school. They are Facebook friends also. I guess you could be a Facebook friend and a school teacher.
So you're originally from Rockaway?
I am originally from Rockaway, Bay Eight Hours stand up.
Yeah, I mean, does that mean something to you today? Like, did it shape who you are?
It did in that my mom didn't want me near it.
Yeah.
My sister was into, I don't want to say a bunch of bullshit to make my sister sound like a reformed criminal, though she is. I don't mean that, Joelle. Please don't hurt me. But no, it made her realize what she didn't want me around. So it very much shaped a lot of the experiences that she put me into, whether it was doing CTY or prep for prep and things like that, understanding that she didn't want me to go to school out there because she did have my sister as a student and failed my sister, which is a claim that she still eats out on today.
Your mom is a teacher.
Yeah, my mom was a teacher. Okay. And
shut your sister down.
Eventually. Yeah, no, she failed my sister, like hardcore failed her. And she would tell the story to all. She's like, look, I failed my daughter. Damn. So if you think you can't fail my class, you got it fucked up.
Your mom's cold.
Yeah, no, she's rough. She's rough.
You know when people are like, hey, I don't want to take my work home? It's like the opposite.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. Like, my mom would separate it. Like, she was like, she apparently told her a couple of times, and she's like, look, it's possible for you to fail my class. And my sister just didn't take it seriously. And then my sister failed her fucking class. But, like, she never was, like, at home, like, look, do this work. You have to do it. She's like, no, you choose your path. However
right.
you do it is how you do it. And so...
So do you have friends then? So your life is outside of Rockaway then?
Yes, yes, my life
and
is outside of
And are your
Rockaway.
Friends inside Rockaway or are you like...
I have friends in Rockaway. I was in the...
Shout them out. Shout out your block.
peace to Brendan Murphy, Karen Walsh, James Gwynn.
There you go.
The gang.
Yeah.
All the white Irish kids that I grew up with who affected my corporate voice today. No, I did like the Rockaway shit. Like I played basketball at St. Camillus and like we hung out and had sleepovers and did shit like that. But yeah, for the most part, like my extracurriculars were really outside of Rockaway. Like Prep for Prep was Manhattan, CCY was at Johns Hopkins. So yeah,
going all over the place.
I was getting it in, man.
Yeah,
I was getting it in. I would go
That's a long train ride, first of all, from Rockaway into Manhattan.
Private bus.
Wow. Private bus.
When I look back on some of the shit that my mom did when I was a kid and understanding that she was an educator, it's baffling sometimes.
Yeah.
Because there was like Disney vacations, which I'm at the point now where I still don't want to take a fucking Disney vacation. Like, I'm probably going to take one, though, just for shits and gigs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like she took us to Disney and like splurged like we were in the hotel that had the monorail running through it.
That's awesome.
And I look back and I remember like I look at pictures, but I also look at shit where like I was fully Mickey'd out.
Yeah.
And so like I had all the like $90 t-shirts. I was like, you know what? That's pretty fucking special. If there's ever a reason to like not end up in prison or have my mother come and visit me, you know, that would be it.
Well, did you have a moment when you were like a kid and you were just like, oh, I realize what this is and I realize how hard my mom is like going for me? Or were you like a jerk?
I was a jerk. I was a kid. Yeah. Like there was one time she didn't take me toy shopping and I got straight A's on a report card or straight E's for excellent at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
On a report card. And, it was like one slightly less than E, whatever that was. And I was like, okay, so we can go get toys now. She's like, yeah, you didn't reach the terms of the agreement. And I was like, I didn't take it for what it should have been as a teachable moment. I was like, you motherfucker. Like, you gonna skate me out of some, as hard as I work this section and you just gonna fuck me out of some toys? And you know, I didn't realize that it's A, teaching you accountability, but also sometimes moms are just plain tired.
Right,
and,
sure.
Like, she does a lot, and me asking to go toy shopping after she's had a long day of work and I'm coming with a report card, I should have just been happy with that personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut and call it a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, kids are dicks.
God damn.
I was certainly one myself.
You were king dick.
Yeah, I was king dick. King ding-a-ling was me.
That's a weird prep for prep, were you ahead of the rest of your class? Did you...
Contingent 14, bang, 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 bang,
what
bang, bang,
what
bang.
Does that mean?
Also, it was partially fuck prep for prep because they were on some racist bullshit.
Talk about it.
Because I had such a long commute, there were times when I would come home and my mom would write my homework down for me while I was taking a bath.
Yeah.
So
you dictate it.
Yeah. Like she would read a problem
to me. By the
way,
the more you say about your mom, the more she is a queen. Like,
no, she's a ride or die. Like, no, that's my... We just moved her into the new crib right by a fucking country club and had a ball over the Christmas break. She's always been one of my best friends and has always obviously looked out for me. But like the older I get, the more and more she evolves into like truly like... That's my people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I love her dearly.
Yeah, and that toy situation was pretty dickish of
you. No, we had to... Yeah, and I was an asshole. We had to get back for that. I feel like I've made up for it in more than my fair share of purchased goods and golf lessons. But no, like I would dictate my homework to her. Like, she would read me a problem, and which, by the way, I'm a kid doing fucking math problems in my head and doing Latin homework in a bathtub. Like, shout me out. Like, right. Show me some love. Yes. And
are you asking us to now?
No, shout out to you guys. Appreciate you.
Yeah. I don't shout out people who beg for shout outs.
That's a lie. I've seen your follow Friday. And so one teacher took exception to this and brought it up as an issue of plagiarism and said, oh, well, his homework isn't in his writing. And like, again, I'm doing well. I'm getting along with kids. Like, and they brought me for a meeting, and I went home that day, and they'd already told my mom, but I had to tell her. She's like, I want you to understand that that is in no way, shape, or form your fault. And was like really good about it. But yeah, I got kicked out of Prep for Prep.
They kicked you out?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep.
So where do you go from there? Are you just like...
I went back to school. Went back to a teacher who was like, well, you won't make... Because I was like gifted and talented, but also I get really... My attention span doesn't lend itself to bullshit. And so like I would get bored as fuck in school. And so I had a teacher who shall remain nameless because I've forgotten her. She's like, well, you won't do well in Prep for Prep because you don't do your work in a timely fashion. I was like... I know all the answers. Like, what am I like? I was like, I could teach fifth grade if I was you. Like,
yeah.
And she
and
she,
you
she
returned
didn't care
to her
too much. Yeah, I returned. Well, I returned the next year, and I told her about Prep for Prep and how it went, which is my mistake because you don't let haters know your moves. shout out to my first hater.
There's a bar.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Keep it. it's from me to you. And so she was like, well, I knew you wouldn't. I was like, oh, well, you're a dick. Years later, she asked me to come back and speak to her class, and I did because That's... love is the way to be spread.
No.
But like, I came in. I should have shitted on her.
Yeah, you go in on her like during the...
I was like, and this teacher's going to try to tell you you won't make it. No, I didn't. I was way more gracious than that. I wish I would have. I feel like if I was a bit more vindictive at random points in my life, my story would be a lot more interesting. But I wasn't.
I wish you just like turn... Instead of like facing the class, you just turn to her and just
give her bars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just give her pure bunny rabbit for 90 seconds. Here's my advice. Exactly. Don't listen to her because she needs a teacher's manual to understand basic algebra. So that lets you know where she is in life.
In any gifted and talented program, they sort of like want to expand your mind past most things that you understand at that age. Mm-hmm. And did they introduce any type of like class, like for us, I don't know what your experience was like, Jeff, but mine, I remember they were just like, yeah, I know you had interest in like audio stuff and like writing, but like we want to put you in haiku. And I had to take like a whole, like, I don't know how long the class was, but it was haiku, and it was just like, we have to do more than one of these days of this.
No, they didn't expand us outside of the space too much. It was,
yo, just do a quick haiku for us.
They didn't do rocketry with you or anything. Like,
we had access to like all the, it was basically just an accelerated curriculum. Like, mm-hmm. They didn't do any like special interest shit. Like, yeah, we, everything was like the class at large. And if you wanted to do extra shit, which is my mother, God bless her, was so keen on me doing other shit outside of it, because they never tried to push you. It was like, oh, you clearly like music, here, let's put you here. It's like, I got put into band. I was the only fourth grader in sixth grade band.
Whoa.
Or at the younger, because my mother pushed for it.
Yeah.
Like, my grandfather was a jazz musician and would put me, or taught jazz. He loved jazz. He might not have been a, this isn't one of those stories where people find records from my granddad. But he taught me clarinet. And so I took up clarinet. Like, he gave me a clarinet from his personal collection. So I started playing clarinet. And my mom's like, you know, Jamal's good. So I auditioned for the band teacher, and I was in band.
Two grades ahead.
Yep.
Holy shit.
Yep.
Did you,
Don Bishop?
Did you sit like near kids who appreciated that, or did you find that they were like,
well, like, who's
not a Jamal fan, or
who's,
what?
Who's the chicken?
Like? Right. Who's this fourth grader? No, it wasn't. It was cool, man. Like, because it was all like, we all knew each other just because it's one, like, it's not a bunch of accelerated classes. It's one accelerated lane. You get the same teacher that the year prior to you had, unless you know, they quit or drink themselves into a stupor. And so, like, it was, so, like, they all the kids knew me. Like, I was cool enough with all of them. I was only dicks to kids in my grade. So, yeah, it was, we got along fine. It wasn't, I didn't run into any bullshit. And there was also a clarinet deficiency. So I was like, I was third chair, and it was only because there were only three chairs. And if I wasn't there, they would have only had two clarinets. So I don't know if it was a matter of necessity or skill, but I was there and they weren't. And I played Happy Birthday for every relative ever in my family.
There you go.
Yeah,
yeah,
the there you go.
So while other kids
earn
were playing
keep.
Recorder, all the kids were playing recorder, I was fucking it up with the clarinet. And still mastered the recorder. Like, don't get it fucked up.
My hot cross buns?
My hot cross buns was quite fuego. Let's get that. Let's just put that on the record. My recorder game was strong.
Do you continue that into high school? Are you in band in high school?
I was in band in high school, but I was trombone in high school.
How did you reed to a brass instrument?
I spent the summer playing trombone. Nerd shit.
Man. Did you push for that, or was that someone else?
I wanted to learn something different. I wanted to play trumpet. My mother wouldn't let me play trumpet. My grandfather had a trombone, so trombone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you nice?
I was serviceable. I don't know, like who is it? Trombone Shorty, and then like 95 other people who were all at the exact same skill level and considered masters. So I wasn't like
you were sixth chair.
I wasn't supreme in trombone, but I was second chair. I held my own. I did trombone. I did choir. Hunter is very much a chorus. Sorry, not choir.
Okay.
Separation of church, and state, and all that fly shit. I don't even know if that's the right thing. It lets you know how much attention I pay. But yeah, so I did. I was second chair trombone. Did chorus. Did musical rep. Like did Brick City Playhouse again. Academic ineligibility, but I made it with a speaking role.
Brick City being Newark.
Yeah. Brick Prison Playhouse. Yeah, yeah. Go fuck yourself, Jeff. Thanks for pointing out. You could have just let that ride. But yes, Brick Prison Playhouse. I was not in a play with Redman. Though that would have been
hilarious. Yeah. You and Rod Digga playing opposite each other.
Yeah. Instead, you were with Immortal Technique.
Shout out Rod Digga. Yeah.
What does high school mean to you? Are you taking it somewhat seriously at first, or are you just like immediately you're like
I took it seriously at first, not too seriously in the middle, in that I didn't take it seriously at all in the middle. And then I just tried to take it too seriously way too late. And so I was out of Hunter by 97.
Out of Hunter. You got kicked out.
Yep.
You were asked to leave.
I was asked to leave because
and you said no.
I was like, oh, go fuck yourself. And my mom's like, all right, well, now you got to go to college. And she's like, you could finish high school. I was like, that would be laughable. She's like, yeah.
So instead of finishing high school, what'd you do?
Like, took my GED and went to college that very next semester.
Where do you go to take your GED?
She just walked me into a program. She's like, I don't think you need to take a prep course. I was like, I probably don't need to take a prep course. Like, I'd taken my SATs by this point.
Yeah.
I'd smoked my SATs. I was
like, what was your score?
Do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, let's just do it.
1550.
Woo! No big deal. Wow. No big deal.
Like,
was there any part of you that was like, let me take it again to try to get that 1600?
I wanted to. My mom was like, if you fuck it up. I was like,
yeah, wait, how did you get kicked out of Hunter?
I didn't go to class.
The one thing you have to do.
Lazy but talented. Yeah, no, you got, like, I know I went to school with some, and God love them, but I went to school with some kids who are not that bright, and it's evident in their Facebook posts today. Like, I see kids who are just like, I was like, oh, you're just kind of middling.
You were in the yearbook, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they took the yearbook photo.
I was in yearbook. I went to prom. I was all over the place.
But you didn't cross that stage.
You can't ban the snowman. I mean, we're also class of 99, so I was out 2 years early. Like, but I was still a part of everything. I would have gone to semi-formal, but I had a college date.
Oh.
And so I had to skate on my semi-formal date. Sorry, 80.
So you take the GED,
mm-hmm.
and there's no, like, is there any, like, formality to it? Or is it just, like,
I walked in, sat down, took my test, finished each section early, was bored shitless. Got my results, went to Nassau Community College.
Okay.
Like, there was no pomp or circumstance to it.
There's nothing less glamorous than saying I went to Nassau Community College.
Yeah, no, I mean, because I had to go somewhere. Like, right. My mom didn't want me away. She's like, but you have to take college courses.
So how old are you at this point?
I was 16.
16.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone else that you know is in high school.
Yep.
Or everyone your age is in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you know more people older or younger.
I know older. Yeah. I hung out with some 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so you...
All my friends are in high school, though.
Today.
To this. All the ones who all the seats in my white van are occupied by kids 15 and younger.
So at 16, what is it like walking into any college class at that point?
Easy.
Yeah?
It was the most... Because Hunter does in that way. They do prepare you very much for being responsible for your schedule and things like that if you actually adhere to it and go to class. But yeah, no, it was – so I was ready for it. Like, and I'd seen it, and I'd done summer programs. So I was like – I was all too ready for the practical part of the college curriculum. And then the work was just – it wasn't difficult.
But what about, like, the social aspect of, like, these are kids who are, you know
– I got a job in the library to bide my time. And would just get along with kids. Like, started dating a girl in my class who I think, had she known my real age, would have considered herself to be a pedophile. She'd let me drive her car, which was illegal.
So no driver's license?
Nah, man, I had a learner's permit, a very strong learner's permit.
You know gas and
yeah. I know what not to do to run into a wall. But yeah, she would let me drive her car around campus and like just go and do like little stupid shit, like run to the mall, go over to Hofstra, shit like that.
Were you living on campus?
No, well, there's no on campus living, so I was at home.
Gotcha.
At this point, so I still.
So everyone commutes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You were working at the library?
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to know the Dewey Decimal System at that point?
At that point, you did need to know the Dewey Decimal System.
Wow.
Absolutely. So, which is just, again, like it was amazing how many kids didn't get it, but it's the simplest shit ever. But yes, I did need to know the Dewey Decimal System and cataloging, and thankfully I never had to be the one to put the books back on the shelf.
You did not?
No.
What was your job?
I just sat at the desk and told people where shit was. Like, I was, is that a librarian? That's not what a librarian is it? Like, just because you work in a library doesn't make you a librarian. But yeah, I just pointed people in the right way.
What did you want to do?
Initially, financial advisor, until I realized that shit only sounded glamorous and was fucking awful. Then I wanted to be famous rapper.
Okay.
And at this point, like, I'm still rapping with friends in high school. We're doing shows and shit.
You were infamous.
I was inf. Infinite.
Oh,
I was never
infinite.
Infamous. I was never infamous.
And where did that come from?
Infinite was just a name that I thought sounded cool. And
right.
So I did it.
Did
I dropped
it sound
the
cool?
E. In hindsight?
Were you part of a crew?
I was part of Metaphorics.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, this is very...
Yeah, this is a lot. I don't often talk about rap beginnings just because I hate to be that person who works at a record label or deals with rappers. I'm like, you know, by the way, I rap too. Like, no, I don't think you should do that. Like, wait, let me... Nah, so right. I've never once been that person.
What were you listening to at that time?
Everything from Lyricist Lounge. That was a joy of it. Like, I got to be around and was free enough to hit a lot of Lyricist Lounge stuff, to go to shows at, like, the Lion's Den and Pyramid and shit like that. A lot of Breeze Ever Flowing. A lot of underground shit. I spent a good amount of my time and liquid money in Fat Beats.
Well, did you see Immortal Technique perform live, like, when you guys were both in high school?
No, not when we were in high school. The one I didn't see Immortal Technique or Dugius perform when I was in high school. I saw them after the fact,
yeah.
But was aware of them.
And what were you looking to do with your career at that point? Like, would you go and just find ciphers, or did
Or does career sound like
career
a
is very
too locked?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. Career is what I was looking to do with my rapping.
Yes,
it was. I am peeking out when I get close to the mic. Look at those levels. That's terrific.
All good.
either way. No, I wanted to be on. Don't turn me down.
No, all right.
Yeah, DJ, turn me up.
I wanted to go to ciphers. I wanted to be underground famous because I thought that was the way, and then didn't realize that seeing Wordsworth get on the same bus that I was getting on might not have been the most fun or the best objective for a career. But I just wanted to be. I wanted to have vinyl and Fat Beats. I wanted to be recognized enough to not have to double dutch my way into a cipher.
Right.
I just wanted to be respected underground rapper.
Does that mean that you hated all commercial rap?
No, I loved commercial rap.
Okay.
I was Jay-Z, Biggie, like,
yep.
I listened to all, but I had a special affinity for the Lyricist Lounge show just because it seemed very attainable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seemed close, like you would see the flyers. Once I left Nassau and was at Old Westbury for 2 years before finishing at Pace, I went to school with Rise of Demigod, so I would see him at the radio station when I would go up there and mix and use their facilities. So that's what I like. I just wanted to be, you know, respected enough to make $500 a week.
Yeah.
Talk about your throwback jersey collection.
Oh, phenomenal.
Infinite, even.
It wasn't infinite. It was very fine, but it was phenomenal. And I mean, they should have never gave me money.
Okay.
Because I spent a ton. Probably brought a lot of bootlegs too. When I look back at some of those deals, I definitely hit the garment district,
mm-hmm.
and would buy Air Force Ones for $40 and then would go and get like the most ridiculous jerseys, like the one with every quarterback of the past century on it. And it had like 95 numbers and went down to your knee. Yeah, a lot of 4X jerseys had to be purged from the collection. But it was exceptional. My most prized one, what was my most prized jersey? A Spirit of St. Louis jersey.
That's dope, though.
The Spirit of St. Louis, which in hindsight was very much a fake Spirit of St. Louis jersey. Yeah, the year was all wrong.
Did you just think that you were the one guy who found like the
I thought I was the dude. It was like an alternate color. I was like, oh, this shit's fire. And thankfully, no pictures exist. Two-tone do-rags to go with all of it. I was
really.
I dressed. Oh, I was full regalia when it came to my douchebag.
What was your denim like?
Oversized and gaudy. I was a Maya before a Maya was a Maya.
Anyone can get it today.
Yeah, I'm letting the yopper spray. Now, a lot of parasukos, a lot of ridiculous. I had Pele jumpsuits, my velour game again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was special needs. Right. It was quite out of here.
What, Sean John?
Sean John, you name it. Aniche. NYC, pardon me.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just, well, it really depends.
Isn't it just NYC spelled phonetically?
Yes. Yeah, but like, as Kanye said, NYC, oh, that's Aniche.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Let's take our cues from Kanye.
Yeah.
He's not going through any problems. He's a good pacing point.
Did you have any of those jackets that had all of the NBA logos on it?
Fuck, like, yes. Yeah. I had denim, pleather, and one wool jacket.
Did you have any leather hats?
No, I didn't.
Do you have any of this stuff still?
Nah, man. That all went to, I want to say Goodwill, but there's no Goodwill behind giving that shit away. So some of it went to the trash. A lot of it went and got donated. I tried to sell some shit on eBay. And one kid returns like, this is a fake. And I was like, well, you can't prove that. It's like, actually, I can. I was like, well, it was real to me. So that didn't go well. But yeah, so a lot of it is in the trash, hopefully burned and living in the atmosphere by some point, clouding our lungs.
So during those financial advisor sort of days,
during that dream?
Yeah. But
sophomore year.
Did you have an internship at like any institution?
Nah.
So you just like, you were like, nope, you know what? I'm not going to do that.
My two internships in life. No, I didn't. Sorry. I don't know if is that a bad segue? Yeah, let's talk about internships. Fuck it. Jump all over the place. My two internships in life were thesource.com and shout out to Tracy McGregor and my brother Brian Getz and Revlon in trademark law.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So for, I don't know which one to start with. I only want to talk about the source, to be honest. But like,
Source.com.
Yeah.
Source.com, not the source.
How did you get the source.com?
My man Brian brought me in. He was like, hey, they're looking for people who know computers and who also know rap and who can roll a blunt. Mm-hmm. True story.
Did you know how to roll a blunt?
Oh, I expertly rolled a blunt.
You said, let me throw on the Sean John and walk absolutely. Right in.
I went, met with Tracy McGregor. At the time, I had cornrows, and my first order of business was bringing in someone who had braided. She's like, oh, where'd you get your hair braided? I was like, oh, you know, uptown. I went to Harlem and just went to one of the ladies there, and it was $25. It's like, yeah, you should bring somebody here to braid my hair. I was like, wait, what? And not realizing that's, you know, a part of the process. I never did bring the person to braid
you
her
didn't?
Hair, but I referred her.
Oh.
She came in with her hair braided, and I don't know if she ever forgot about it, but I certainly pretended I did. There was a Youngbloods party that I rolled blunts for, and we made blunt hors d'oeuvres. We stole humongous Tanqueray bottles, plastic Tanqueray bottles, which lived in our rooms while we were in college. Yeah, it was fun. It was access. It was hilarious shit. It was being close to people that you normally read about. We shared offices with Don Diva.
Wow.
You never know how much you smell like weed until... You share offices with Don Diva
right.
and leave every day and try to go to class afterwards. And it's just, yeah.
Stays with you.
Smells of the loud.
And Revlon?
Revlon, yes. My mother's former student was heading up trademark
law. Your sister.
Law. Yes, yes. Hi, Joelle. She could never be a lawyer. She hates the law. So one of my mom's former students was working in trademark law. She's like, hey, if you have somebody who... We, like an internship, we have some positions and we'll interview. She's like, oh, well, and she gave her my name. She's like, wait, Jamal isn't your son? She's like, yeah. She's like, okay, the job is his. So I didn't have to interview or anything. Went in dressed like all four members of Boys to Men.
Nice.
Just horrible.
You had a cane?
Horrible, horrible garments.
Did you also have to roll a blunt?
I did not have to roll blunts at Revlon. I didn't. I got a lot of free samples. Do with that what you will. With which I started my slow descent into baldness because I dyed my hair with some of the off-brand hair coloring that was there. But got paid handsomely. It was like $25 for the summer.
Wait,
$25 an hour, not for the summer.
Yeah.
Please do not besmirch the name of Revlon. They are a proud sponsor of this podcast.
Wait, what did you know about trade? Trademark law at the beginning of the summer?
I knew nothing of trademark law.
And what'd you know at the end of the summer?
How to file. That was the bulk of it.
So you weren't even going to become like, you know, a trademark lawyer.
I wasn't
going to
become a trademark lawyer. No, it didn't make me say, hey, I want to go to law school now. Like that wasn't what did it for me. I was there just reading shit, filing shit, sitting in an office, dressed horribly.
Yeah.
And I was close to FAO Schwartz, which was a bright spot.
Okay.
And
yeah, get those toys. Finally get your toys. Yeah.
Well, I had to get them myself because at that point I was just getting money. and so that was part of my summer. And the other part of it, once that internship was up, was spent teaching for CUNY.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were an adjunct professor?
I taught. It was Research Foundation for CUNY. It was like a high school program, and I would teach kids.
Cool.
Yeah. So.
So music is definitely a part of your life.
From yes.
Clarinet yes. to trombone to rapping to the internship, but mm-hmm. but where do you see it going?
The internship, I saw it as a way to get into Unsigned Hype.
Yeah.
That's what I was yeah. like, oh, this, if something's going to happen with this rap shit, it's got to happen now.
I mean, did you slide a CD toward like that desk?
You're I
like,
did. Who is this guy? I asked my demo to realizing that they were so far removed from anything that had to do with the publication. and I gave them the demo. I was like, you might want to give this a listen.
Yeah.
And they did. They're like, yeah, that was music, I guess. And that was the last we ever spoke of it.
Well, but like, how do you move forward from that then?
You keep trucking.
Keep sliding your demos.
Yeah. Whatever it takes. So we kept rapping. We'd split by the time I was done with college. My other group members were still there. So I then start grad school. And I'm at NYU studying music business, but have access to the recording facilities there. I had friends who were at Columbia.
You went for music business because you were like, well, I should know the business or I want to get into the business.
I went for music business because I wanted to know the business and because I wanted to, at this point, I was more aware of the executives around it. And I realized that I could work in music, be knowledgeable about music and not have to make music because I was also very aware of rappers who were doing horribly.
Right. This point, too, clearly you had graduated from college. You walked the stage that time, I assume?
Nope, didn't walk.
Why not? You get kicked out?
I was just over it. I was just onward. Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, Jeff didn't walk at his either. He was
well,
just
it
like,
rained.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go and stand in the rain.
My biggest thing was my mom knowing that I was done with college, that I came and did it, and that was it, and we were done.
Yeah.
And so.
And she had to feel pretty great, right?
Yeah, I was like, no extra shit to pay for. Sorry, I didn't think about the ceremony of it and how, you know, that might be fun for family to go to. And also how you rack up on fucking gifts when you invite people to a graduation party. There was no foresight there. Because then I've been thinking, I've been like, you know what? I'm graduating and we're having a party and here's where I'm registered. Buy me shit.
Right. FAO Schwartz.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Go pick up all the toys and that big ass piano. We gonna get back for all the times that they played me on the report card.
That's right.
I was one E short of being perfect.
You go to grad school though,
mm-hmm.
and you realize like, all right, well, I'm not done with school just yet.
I thought that there was more to learn. I started by taking a summer class at NYU and met a couple of professors who were like, well, is this something you want to do more? I was like, you know, it might be. And it started a conversation where I was allowed kind of, wow, I was going to say something that sounded really horrible. I was going to say I was allowed backdoor entry. I wasn't. It was very much on the up and up, but I also realized the connotation that comes with backdoor entry. There was no sodomy in my being admitted, so it was all very much on the up and up.
Prove it.
It still sounds like a whisper when I fart. That's the best I can do. It wasn't the traditional path.
Right.
But got into grad school by the grace of some believing professors and an affinity for music.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what was that experience like? Do you meet any amazing people that come to talk to your class?
I read the Passman book and took the course with Donald Passman, which was remarkable as fuck.
Like, yeah.
To learn business ethics, you know. And
from the guy.
Right. From the head of it. It was before Clive Davis. So this is still Steinhardt School of Ed. Mm. So there was no... I wasn't like around the L. Varners, though I did meet L. later because mm-hmm. I dated a friend of hers. God bless her. there was no, so like, but I'm not meeting, like, I'm not around like folks like that. I didn't have a Marat overseeing my program.
Right.
Like, there was no, so it was very much just like, hey, you get in, you learn the shit. Maybe you get an internship, you go out into the world.
By the way, is now the time that we mentioned that the three of us are going to be speaking at that class come the spring?
Oh, yes. Did we mention that?
Yes,
oh, yeah. I've been waiting to tweet that. Yes. Yeah. So shout out to Future Music Moguls. And
we'll see you guys in
Marat. We'll see you guys in April.
Yeah.
I thought it was March.
Maybe
it's
both.
March 31st.
Yeah.
He said, can you come Saturday, April 1st? Not realizing that 31 days half March. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, do you mean
Jeff,
Sunday,
Jamal
April
has
1st?
A degree from the school, so let's defer to him.
It doesn't mean I can read a calendar. It means I paid for everything. But yes, it is March 31st that we are going to speak with Future Music Moguls, and we're looking forward to it.
Gonna ruin some young minds.
That's right.
I hope so. I hope so.
So no one came to speak to you that was like the Jamal of that day?
No. Like, I had access to people. I didn't take it. Like, it wasn't... it also wasn't full access. Like, people would come in, we'd have guest speakers, but even then it wasn't like focused around, okay, here's what you're going to do. It's like, okay, now you know the music business, do with that what you will. Like,
all right, so what was the big takeaway from it? Don't get in the music business.
Partly. Really? For a long time, the biggest takeaway was, wow, I just wasted time and money.
Damn.
Because, I mean, I get into, like, by the time I get a major label job and I'm around people, I'm like, oh, there are people here who are top executives who can barely write their name.
That's true.
You know, so I was like, okay, this is kind of, and never, like, I mean, you have the credential, you have the learning, like, you have everything that you take away from it. But I was also seeing that, you know, had maybe I just started carrying crates when I'd left Hunter. Like, I
right,
would be,
right.
You know, I might be SVP of the world right now, or like I could be the head of the label, or like I could go and work anywhere just based off sweat equity. And so that was a cross I had to carry for a little bit, just very sort of pissed off and wondering if I'd wasted time, money, and lost footing, because this is also around the time that the music industry starts to kind of refind itself,
right?
Post the download hell that it went through.
But have you used any of those things that you did learn in the ensuing, like, however many years?
Oh, 100%. No, yeah. There's times that I refer to the Passman book semi-regularly. There's plenty that I know about working in a studio just from the practicum part of learning, and like know my way around engineering a bit. And there's a ton of the business ethics, a ton of music theory that I still call on. So there's plenty that I do rely on and utilize.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to see that at a point when you're making $40,000 a year.
Yeah. Did taking music business courses teach you anything about HR?
Nah, because I fucked up with HR royally. Have we spoken about this? Or
no.
This not, oh, okay.
But real quick, no. I'm just curious, where is the Donald Passman book located at the library?
I go to Amazon. If you think, I know I'm still supposed to know the Dewey Decimal System. I don't. I can't tell you the last time I went to the library was when I was unemployed and I didn't pay the cable bill because that was the one thing that could go.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have internet.
There you
so
go.
I went to the
shout library, to libraries.
Bang bang.
Anyway, I'm sorry. HR.
So my first industry job, like my first is through a temp agency. I just finished school and I was like, all right, I want to get a job in music, in the business, and this is how I'm going to go about doing it. I'm just going to take the first thing that's there and then work my way up just through, you know, basic back dealings. And
this does sound like an HR problem.
That sounds horrible. But like, I'm going to get in the building, and I knew that was the hardest part.
So you're willing to start in the mailroom and work your way
wherever?
Okay.
Absolutely. Like, understanding that, you know, people with fucking law degrees from Harvard work in the mailroom at a lot of agencies.
Right.
And I was just like, look, this is the way to get in. So I went and got a job through a temp agency at Universal Music Group, working in admin services.
Okay.
So I was there. And admin services is basically making sure that mousetraps are, making sure that people put mousetraps. I wasn't doing it myself.
Yeah.
Make sure that mousetraps are dropped when somebody sees a mouse behind a vending machine. Make sure that people have ID cards that work. And that's it. Very much just like the
facilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All facilities.
But you're in the building.
Yeah. I'm in the building. I could walk downstairs. My card key worked for every floor. So I would
worldwide
walk
downstairs,
go to Def Jam.
You're not
shout
just
out to
in
50th.
The building. You control the building.
I more or less control the building. Yes. I could go to every floor, every label. I was close to the people who did the college ADR rep shit, and so I was like around it, would go to Def Jam. My friend Brian was at Def Jam at the time, so I got to be kind of around that. I got to go to the different labels. I got to go to Rockefeller when it was still on 29. So
are you still passing out your mixtape?
No, but at this point, the rap was a thing of the past at this point. Like, I'd gone through the open mics. I was at... Wait, was rap? Yeah, rap was a thing of the past, but managing wasn't. So we'll get. Oh, yeah. Well,
and who are some of the people now that you would see then in the that are around now that you would see in the building? Did you see Shari Bryant?
Oh yeah.
Did you see
Wayno?
Wayno Shari Clark.
I did not see Wayno.
Okay.
I didn't see Wayno. I think Wayno and.
Do you want to see him now?
I love seeing Wayno now. Wayno is family.
He's right around the corner.
Let's go.
Here
visit.
He comes.
Yeah, I didn't see Wayno. I would see Shari, and again, I would go to like the digital corner, and like I would walk through like trying to make the most of my lunch break.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see people. I saw them when I was eventually working at Def Jam.
Yeah.
And would work with them and would be around them, but like I would see people in passing and didn't have much of an awareness of who they are because social media was not really a thing yet.
Right.
But yeah, I would would run past a lot of people. I saw Pecos and would see LA occasionally because I wouldn't go to that floor. I would walk past 28 to get to 27 where they were.
Right. But you have an understanding of what the building's like and how it runs.
Lay of the land.
And where can you go from working in admin services?
Yes, I was looking for the way. I was like, okay, so who does the hiring here? Like, how do I? Like, I figured once I was in the building and could access the internet and be like just around the shit, then I would, you know, be okay.
Right, you're a friendly face now. They recognize you.
Like they know enough of me to say, oh, okay, here goes the other fat black guy who's not Devon Washington. But that didn't quite work out because I got fired from admin services.
You got fired?
I was the longest tenured.
You were asked to leave.
I was asked to leave. They didn't renew. Okay. I've only been fired once in my life, but they didn't renew it, so that wasn't technically a firing. But they didn't ask me to come back, and like he's very standoffish, black. Like he's you know way too cordial with others and doesn't focus on. Again, the job was easy as fuck,
right?
So I would knock the shit out that I had to do, and then I'd be friendly with people.
Yeah,
HR was on the same floor. I would go walk over to HR and see if anything had been posted or if there were any like to see what I could apply my skill set to. Not the best way to go around it, but it made sense in my head.
Yeah.
So I did, and they're like, oh, well, he's not at his desk enough. He doesn't take on the response. I was like, I don't have to sit there and answer phones all day for my words to be done. Nothing was left at the end of the day. Nothing was outstanding. But again, smarter than the work. And so the two racist and very lonely white women who oversaw my department didn't ask that my my assignment, it wasn't a
right.
contract, to be honest. I was making $600 a week. but they didn't ask that the assignment, it was more than $600. Was it? Yeah, it was like $750 after taxes, so I was okay. But they didn't ask that it was renewed, and so I wasn't asked back.
And what do you do?
I wrote an incendiary email. Well, you know, they're not very professional, and fuck them, and fuck this.
Right.
And I didn't get an assignment with them, so I went and I started doing consulting. Would help people with management, would just apply my knowledge. I was still going to open mics and shit like that.
Yeah.
So I would meet artists who were trying to do shit.
Like?
And so artists who were trying to do shit.
Yeah.
God, I don't want to put names
out there. Okay, okay. But you're consulting.
They didn't do much.
Right.
But yeah, I'm consulting. I'm helping them in studio sessions. I'm helping them with projects. I'm letting them know what they should and shouldn't do. I'm helping them speak to clubs to do gigs. I'm starting a mini management empire, which if I cared more about them, would have been the starts of me in management.
Caring about them instead of caring about you.
Caring about them instead of caring about what I was going to turn that into next.
Okay.
So it would I did well by them. Like I didn't fuck anybody. I didn't take anybody's publishing for all 75 cents.
Right.
But yeah, no, so it was very much me pushing them, but also thinking about how I'm going to push myself. And so I wasn't fully dedicated in the way that they needed full dedication, which is difficult to do if you don't have another stream of income.
Yeah.
Like you can't be a full-time manager, and God bless people who are full-time managers and that is their one source of income, because it's not the easiest thing in the world. And I believe that managers should only eat what they kill. And because they try to take so much off of the plate, and I didn't have people with a lot on their plate, and I would only take away, like if we booked a show, I would take a part of that. But that's, you know, $200 of
right.
which I would take 10%. So, you know.
Also, you had to ride home.
The times are also a lot different because that's still like physical CDs and that's still like, it's in that weird space.
I was manning the merch table and was pretty much treating the merch table like weed. So like I would sell eight, keep one. Yeah. So like I would get like one. So like it would be more 20% than anything or closer or sell, you know, four, keep one. And so yeah, I was at that point just kind of, I was figuring it out and figuring out the way, and eventually just got a job at a hospital just because I needed to work and make
doing what at a hospital?
excuse me. I worked in educational services, which was running programs for the nurses and doctors. And I was there. I was the smart kid there.
How does it feel to take a job at that time that you don't necessarily want to
take a job out of necessity?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a kick in the balls. It was fucking awful. And I mean, it was Woodhull Hospital, which if anybody's ever been there, they call it Woodhell with very good reason. It's just
because it's easy.
Because,
it's an easy pun. And that's
clever.
Why. Yeah.
Woodhill didn't quite fit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was there and it was just like not the best facilities, not the best space. My office was clean enough. My office was adjacent to another woman's office who barely spoke English. So that was fun. I got to brush up on my Spanish often. but yeah,
how was your Spanish?
Now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, awful. Well, I'm not español? Conversational, but I can eavesdrop. Mm. un poquito, pero es muy malo. Yeah, I can eavesdrop, but I can't be conversational. Right. I can offer a few things, but I wouldn't drop me in the middle of a Spanish-speaking country and hope for my survival.
It's a pretty good reality show TV.
Yeah, you know. It's like, how good is your second language?
Yeah.
So this is not a place you wanted to be.
It wasn't, but it was a place that was paying the bills, and I was around it, and I was doing that. I was still going to open mics, trying to help people with their shit, also still rapping occasionally and doing shit. At this point, I'm hanging out at Columbia more. Columbia University, not
the hospital.
No, not the hospital
or the country.
I mean, though I could have.
Yeah,
I
could have
been at the country. You in Columbia. Either. Yeah. And I would have been just fine. So I'm hanging out at Columbia, which I originally met Marat. And so I'm around and I'm thinking that everything's fine. I have money in my pocket, bills are paid, my sidekick is up to date.
Nice.
And I thought that I was doing okay, and then I wasn't. So I got sick, sick as fuck. And I didn't have health insurance because, you know, no longer a student, and just didn't want to pay for health insurance until I got a corporate job. I was like, oh, well, I'll have a job soon. And I'm working in a hospital, so I'll be able to get seen. And I had bilateral walking pneumonia, lungs filled with fluid, just horrible. I was in ICU. It was
a lot. How does that happen? I mean, not how does it happen, but like, how do you feel?
It was walking pneumonia that just got really bad. Like, I thought it was just some shit that could be dealt with over-the-counter meds, and I tried to treat it accordingly. And apparently you can't do that. So it got worse and worse. It was a point where anytime I went to sleep, I had to sleep propped up because I couldn't lay down because I would feel like the liquid pooling, and I would feel what was essentially myself starting to suffocate.
Oh, this is not like a minor thing where you're just
like... by the time it got bad, it was really fucking bad. Like, it wasn't like it could have been dealt with, like walking pneumonia. Like, they call it walking pneumonia for a reason. Like, you can get around with the shit and be just fine. But I didn't treat it accordingly. Like, I didn't take what I was supposed to take. I was taking like, oh, I'll just take NyQuil to sleep. Like, just knock myself and take DayQuil in a day and be okay. But like, I would head to work and I was walking for my train and I would feel shortness of breath after a block. Like, just shit that shouldn't have happened.
Right.
I would just, like, I sweat because, you know, glands are what's in our bodies and some of us sweat. But, yeah, I would sweat, like, profusely in the winter. Just, like, without, like, coat buttoned up or nothing, like, wearing no hat. Like, and it was just, like, it got really bad. Mm-hmm.
In your estimation, what period of time do you think you were, like, having symptoms that you ignored it?
I would say a good 5 weeks where it just went unchecked. And finally, my mom, as she's heading on vacation, she's like, all right, I'm going to have your aunt just check in on you just because if you're not better after the weekend, I want you to go and get seen, and whatever the cost is, we'll figure it out. Again, shout out to mom.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, fine. I'll go enjoy your vacation, get away, have fun. And before she left, she's like, no, I don't feel good about this. She took me to the ER. I was admitted. They told her what it was. She canceled her trip. Again, mom, I owe you a lot. And so she canceled her trip, stayed with me. And what they told her was that had I not come in before the weekend, or had I not come in Friday, I wouldn't have made it through the weekend.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Like, at all?
Yep.
So what was that hospital stay like?
3 weeks of rough. I was intubated and unconscious in the ICU for the first half of it.
So they have to get your permission to do that, right?
They got I signed something.
Yeah.
Because I was an adult, but my mom was there. So they had my next of kin, like my sister, my godsister, yeah, who was a social worker, came in and introduced me to the joy of emergency Medicaid, which took care of everything. Because I was like, I fabricated some stuff. Sorry to the system that worked so hard to support others. But yes, I did have to sign something.
And they put you under and...
I was intubated just to help with the breathing while everything was cleared out of my system.
Yeah. For how long?
This is about a week.
That you were...
A little more than a week.
You were out for a week?
No, I wasn't out for a full week. I was out for maybe 6 days and woke up with a tube down my throat and pulled the tube out.
Because
it's, yeah.
What else?
I was joking. Like, I could feel it's like. Yeah. Yeah, so I was sedated, and then I came from under, and was no longer sedated, and detubated. I don't think that's how the word, but I took my tube out.
Do you have any idea what those 6 days were like?
I had no idea. I didn't know that I was under for that long. I didn't know.
As far as you were concerned, you were just asleep.
I didn't have any like lucid dreams or anything. Like I had no concept of the time or what it was. I went in. They put a line into my thigh to get it to an artery quicker, to help to kind of get some medicine into my system. I went under, and then that was it. And I didn't like bits and pieces of being out of sedation for a moment, but nothing consistent enough to know what was going on, is know what I was feeling or what was happening. And then one day, one night, unchecked. And like, while a nurse wasn't making their rounds, wasn't in the room with me, and nobody was visiting, I came from under, and thankfully my hand was free, because had my hands been tied down, that would have been a pretty fucked up situation. But my hands, like, I wasn't secured, and came from under sedation and got my tube out.
Which is not what they expected.
Yeah. At all. Apparently you're not supposed to do that. It's not.
Well, that's week one.
Yeah. So I couldn't speak for a few days after. My voice started to come back. A lot of ice cubes, a lot of tea. And then everything else was just like being in the bed, getting things ready. They had like the motors on my legs so that my legs wouldn't atrophy in that
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then I just started to come back and vowed to never work in a hospital again. And had people rallying around me who were like, all right, yeah, this isn't what you're supposed to be doing with life. This isn't, like, who makes sure, like, okay, you have to take care of yourself, and, like, you can't let your, like, you can't get sick and just not go. And so I had a good number of guardian angels and family around me who would make sure that I was keeping up with shit the right way. And, yeah, I didn't go back to that job.
Okay, so...
Also, fuck Woodhull Hospital, because I went to get seen. And if you're at a hospital, they should help you with some sort of fucking medical help.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, well, you should go see a doctor. It's like, I'm in a fucking hospital. So yeah, fuck them.
How does that experience, like, change your philosophy towards life?
I realized that it was too short. Like, I was standing by a ceremony, trying to plan things out, not dealing with a ton of urgency. And just kind of doing what I'd always done in life, knowing that shit was going to work itself out. You know, whether it was school, whether it was anything, I always knew that shit would be okay. And just had to take it by the horns a little bit more. So, yeah, I just stopped waiting around for shit to happen and started to actively get after shit happening. And again, was around some people who were great about helping to put me in a position or putting me in a position to where shit would happen easier, whether it was Brian, one of my oldest friends who got me my first job at Def Jam, which was working in digital media or new media at that time. So I was building out MySpace pages and doing shit like that, and, you know, kind of shit that I'd learned from working with artists and helping them with their pages and like pushing the top nav down about 90 pixels to put a player and a store link up there. So I was taking that shit and I started doing it on Mariah Carey and Rihanna's pages, putting myself in the top friends. And
but you know. you get back inside 825 Worldwide Plaza.
I get back inside.
Now you have an ID yourself to get into.
I showed both sides of my ass when I went to take, because I was initially working as a consultant. So I would go and I would still tread lightly.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, they can fuck some shit up if they want to.
Yeah.
But then once I became like officially a consultant, I went up there and I was like a bit freer with it. So worked in new media, then got offered a job in Def Jam proper, working in A&R research and promotion. And so when that happened and I signed my contract and I went to fill out my corporate card paperwork, I went up there and I showed both sides of my ass and one of my balls. I let them have it all.
So, but to be in the music business and work at the legendary label that is Def Jam had to be just unbelievable.
It was amazing. It was amazing. It was surreal as fuck. But also, it made me feel like it was go time. Like,
yeah.
It was to be in the building, to make it through rounds of layoffs, to be recognized by LA and Steve and coworkers, to be able to sit in on these meetings, to be a part of some phenomenal, artists' work and some other not so phenomenal artists' work, meant a lot, you know, to go to the building every day, to see Def Jam on your ID, to have U Music in your email address. Yeah, it was powerful to have a BlackBerry that I didn't have to pay the bill for. These were special times.
Yeah. What was the best meeting that you were a part of?
The best meeting? Oh, fuck. I don't know if it was the best. There was one where Kanye came in to perform his verse from Maybach Music, and it was very much just like, hey, look at me. And so that was interesting because I was sitting right by Kanye's feet. He was like on the conference room table. It's like, look at these shoes.
Yeah.
The best meeting I've ever been a part of was Electric Red performing for us and getting a lap dance from all of the members in the conference room. And that was just something very special. It made for a very, very memorable evening.
What can you say about the leadership of L.A. Reid and Steve Bartles?
Man, they were exceptional. It takes a lot to run a company. It takes a lot to run a company where there's egos everywhere. And not like ego isn't a bad thing. Like, you need ego to make the company run. It makes people take ownership. It makes people understand that they don't want to be associated with something that's not doing shit. But LA is he's a diva, I guess. He's a bit of a male diva, but rightfully so. Like, he's done everything.
Right.
He's very much about his shit. Shit has to be aesthetically pleasing. All the green apples cannot be bruised, and the candles must all have quarter-inch wicks on them. But, like, rightfully so. Like, he's earned that. And then Steve was just, like, the balancing point. L.A. was the passion, and Steve was the practical.
Mm-hmm.
And so they balanced each other really well, I felt like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we...
No, sure.
Yeah. You know.
And do you... when you got the 30 under 30...
Mm-hmm.
Did you lobby for that?
Did I had a... I applied 1 year. I applied when I was 28. 27 going on 28, pardon me. And I didn't get it. I was like, oh, I know I'm working harder than these motherfuckers. And, like, I vented to a friend of mine who was a publicist. And I told him, I was like, hey, you know, like, I don't... I feel like I should be here. I don't necessarily understand why people are in there who aren't me. What am I doing wrong? Or, like, what do I need to be doing? She's like, look, specialize more. Because at this point, like, I was in the building and I was trying to do whatever to make sure I got a corner office. So, like, I didn't, like, the chairman is a chairman for a reason. The president is a president for a reason. You preside over everything because that's the position that you work to get to. I didn't understand that, you know, being a manager didn't mean that I didn't own Def Jam. So I would try to work on all the projects. Like, I would deal in digital, but was a part of promo. Like, I tried to touch everything I could. And so what she said is that maybe you're not specialized enough in what you're doing, and there's no real title to correspond to everything that you want to be doing. So when I went out for it again, it was as I was leaving Def Jam. It happened to happen during the time when I was preparing to leave Def Jam and starting to work for Nick. And so the title part would be taken care of. And so we just specialized it a bit. And she, so I did, I guess I complained about it, moaned a little bit, but I didn't lobby per se. And she submitted me through one of the editors, Gail Mitchell. And I made the list and took my headshot on a BlackBerry camera in LAX.
That's a stunt.
Flossy, a little bit flossy.
What do you think you were really good at digital, like, wise? Back then,
ad buys, ad buys, and page design, and I was very good at the editorial part of digital. I would do the newsletters. I was clever, and I am clever.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, you were.
I was.
And now
I was marginally clever. Yeah. And so there was a bit of that in the editorial. So in helping, like, Twitter was just becoming a thing. So we had some bands that were willing to be a little bit fun about it, and some who weren't willing to be so fun about it, the Killers. and so, like, but I got a chance to apply that a bit and to help and create the language and drive audience and build audiences and do a lot of that interaction and create there. So that was, I felt like the editorial end of it was my stronger part for whatever limited amount that was, one email or 140 characters.
And who were some of the artists that we're talking about back then? Bieber,
Fall Out Boy. Fall Out Boy was largely self-contained. You just had to, once you learned the voice, they were okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned just to talk about Lemonheads occasionally and put exclamation points where they didn't necessarily need to be.
The Dream?
I did some stuff with Terrius. JD was over more of the Def Jam mm-hmm, stuff, and mm-hmm. I was on the island side, so mm-hmm. I did a lot of the pop and rock. But JD, who's currently at Epic, was
JD Anderson.
Yep. I guess he does have a last name.
Yeah.
he did the Rockefella and Def Jam stuff for the most part, and I would help with a couple of things. Like, I would help occasionally with Rihanna and Kanye.
How does the Nick Cannon situation enter your life?
He would be in the office all the time, running around, pushing his artists, and he would pop into my office to just talk about, like, I would help with some of their digital shit outside of what we were doing. So be like, hey, maybe you should be doing this with them, maybe this would make sense, and would deal with the product managers. At this point, they're starting to fuck with the idea of pods a little bit at Def Jam. Pods are essentially where they assign small teams to projects versus just one person presiding over it and it finding its way through each department. So I was working on some of his artist stuff. He would come in and talk, and I'm like, all right, I understand that I need a title to go with this. I see Nick and assume that working with anybody who's in Hollywood means that you're going to instantly be rich, which, you know, wasn't the case. And so I was like, all right, man, look, you have a lot going on. What are you doing in terms of your marketing and in terms of what you see for your artists and your company? Like, so he was like, well, actually, I am looking for, we've been looking for somebody like that. The person who was his head of, was a phenomenal publicist and was heading up his publicity, was preparing to do Justice publicity and was paring down a bit. So they were looking for somebody to enter that role. And I was like, all right, let's do it. Like, fuck it. It's a title. It will be the title. Like, this will get the 30 under 30. This will add that piece, like it'll add that headline piece to it. And so I was like, all right, man, well, if there's something that you'd be down to. He's like, yeah, man, I would want to speak to you about it. I was like, all right, sweet, let's go. And so that's how it happened.
As easy as that.
Yeah, pretty much that easy. There probably should have been more to it than that. Again, hindsight 2020. But yeah, we're off to the races, and it took maybe a month for everything to happen. I said my goodbyes. I went. I spoke to LA and Steve. Steve spoke to me sternly.
he wasn't happy to see you go.
He wasn't. And he was like, you know, he can't do this. Like, that's not, like, that's poaching. And I was like, but it's what you want to do. I give you my blessing. And Steve has always been, like, anytime I've seen him, he's always been gracious. He's always been terrific. But yeah, he was not happy. But then, I mean, I had to go back through the building and work artists. So. He was really good about it, and just it taught me a very important lesson about business. And so yeah, then I rocked with Nick.
And what was working? You were working at Nickelodeon. You were
in the Nickelodeon building
employee. Yep.
I was an incredible employee. Okay. I wasn't a Nickelodeon employee because when I went in and I'm thinking, well, okay,
no, because people might think like, oh, I was an incredible employee, and it's like,
oh no, well, I worked. Yeah, I was general manager of Incredible. I went into Nickelodeon, and my understanding is like, okay. Media conglomerate, terrific. And not knowing that what they, again, this is why I always read the contract first, kids. And so I went there and was told, oh yeah, well, you'll be great, you'll have an executive, you'll have an office, you'll have an executive position. It's like, terrific, let's get to it. And so I put down an outrageous salary demand because I didn't know what they were expecting to pay. But I was like, well, here's what a general manager gets paid in today's competitive environment.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that I was making some huge jump in, like, I saw dollar signs. And so I put $250,000 on my Viacom paperwork. And by this time, I had done projects with Viacom. Like, I'd already.
You know that Viacom does not pay. much money.
I knew they didn't pay managers and directors, VPs, or anybody, but I'm saying if a general manager is expecting to be paid by this company, then $250,000 is what my expected salary is.
Yes.
And so I put $250,000.
And they gave you?
And they gave me nothing.
Just short of that. Yeah.
It was a point where I got paid for producing with Teen Nick, Nickelodeon, MTV2, but I was paid through Nick Cannon's Incredible.
Okay.
I wasn't paid
$250,000. What were your duties at Incredible?
Everything.
Okay.
Overseeing
set the mousetraps.
Yes. Mostly setting mousetraps, making sure the fridge was fully stocked with influence. Finding new business deals. Overseeing all digital, also overseeing the music for what that was, and then being Nick's cool friend.
Yes.
Was my job description.
What cool things did you put Nick onto?
Everything. Beats, headphones. Connected with Monster, where we did that. Foot Locker. I brought in him doing the commercial with Damian Lillard, and made it his agency wake up so that they were like, oh, this is a great fine. Thank you. I was like, yeah, it'd be great if you paid my commission or finder's fee on that. So yeah, just a lot of stuff where they were kind of missing it, but essentially doing like, hey, here are things that you should be doing. Here are places that you should occupy. So getting them into the consumer product space, which has since been bastardized for some less than phenomenal headphones that look like Canal Street version of Beats by Dre. Mm-hmm. No disrespect,
right,
but they're not very fly headphones. Right. So yeah, just getting them into all those spaces, whether it be consumer products, whether it be doing more of the shit with online, like having him. I mean, he had an aversion to doing like shit with like skits and whatnot, but I would put him on my Vine and put him in little random Instagram clips and make him like force him to do the fourth wall personality thing, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, here it's not reality, but it's not reality TV necessarily, but here's where you need to be more involved to give people more of a glimpse into your personality, just because there is a certain stigma attached to him that is, you know, for better or for worse, or mostly for worse, people don't see him for all the good shit that he does, like all the creative that he does, and for all the lanes that he allows people. And so I tried to make it to where more of that could be shared and people could see him as more of a personality than Mariah's husband.
See, I'm surprised that he wouldn't be into doing so much stuff for the camera, because like he does seem like that guy who's so over eager to be like crowd pleasing.
Yeah. There were points where he'd unplug, but yeah, I tried.
Mm-hmm.
I made him do videos for Nike Football Society. I used him a lot. He was very much an unpaid talent.
well, so were you.
Yeah, you were too.
Oh, yeah, you know, thank you. Thank
yeah.
You. But yeah, I used him in a ton of ways that maybe weren't the best utilization.
Do you think that your time there was well spent in terms of what you learned and how you grew?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not an experience I would trade for anything. There are things that I would certainly do differently and expectations that I would change, maybe not lower, but I would alter.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like you can't ever expect from someone what you're willing to give yourself. And I think that was a mistake that I made in assuming that the investment, that I was more than just an employee, or that the investment was more than just an employer putting it into an employee, where like I took the brand on, I didn't get it tattooed like some other people I worked with, and I barely wore the chain. But I was very much, I was pro Incredible, I was pro Nick, and like as a flag that I waved, perhaps, and should not have waved as highly or as strongly.
I had this conversation with our Aunt Jane semi recently, where she was just like, or I guess we were all at dinner with Aunt Jane, and she said
Jeff was there too.
And Dan and our mom.
Shout out to Dan. They make me sit at a different table.
That's fine.
Jamal's a Dan fan. We have a lot of Dan fans. Fan. Yeah.
Everybody's corporate a Dan fan.
Yeah. But Aunt Jane mentioned at some point, she was like, if you don't have any expectations, you won't be let down. And I don't know if that's a way to live life though.
At all.
Like I feel like you need to sort of embrace like whatever it is and go with the highs and the lows.
To not have expectations is a very, I understand that logic, but it is in my opinion, no disrespect and all love to Aunt Jane, but it's an empty way, because you should have expectations. You shouldn't have expectations for others, and they should absolutely be expectations based on what you're willing to bring to the table, what you're willing to leverage and do for yourself, and what you're willing to work towards and build towards.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. Like I went into a situation expecting that things were going to be a certain way, or like, oh, there will be this access, or I will have that. And there was a ton of that, don't get me wrong. But I didn't, it very much changed how I approach anytime I sign a contract, anytime I do anything, whether it be content or with a company. Like it's absolutely shaped how I go into these dealings, even having approached them from a management side before, how I approach them, how I look at them, whether I'm talent or management or whether I'm dealing on the label end. It changes the lens that I look at things through.
And sometimes, by the way, you leave with hurt feelings, and we've all been through that. And I think the end of your time at Incredible wasn't thrilling. I mean, it wasn't like,
nah, man, it was dark as shit for me. Like, and thank you guys, and thank all the friends who were there and check. Like, but like, I was, that was without a doubt the lowest point in my life. I'd never been fired before. I was not fired for a reason other than somebody else was taking the check that was intended for me. And like, it was like, even the talk was like, oh, well, everybody here loves you. They're just, you know, they're going in a different direction, which, you know, it is what it is. It sucks. And I mean, but it's also on me, because I was very loyal to a company, not realizing that it was still a company. Right. Not taking it that it was a job. And I think that people very much fall in love with these brands. They fall in love with these companies. They wave these flags and fall so in love with the trappings of things when they're good that they forget to love themselves through it and to look out for themselves through all the shit. And I was very much there. Like, I was like, all right, well, I'm here. Things are great. Here's where things are going to be even greater. And everything's going to be wonderful because I'm dedicating this. I'm investing this in this company. I'm bringing Eric and Jeff in so that we can try to do a TV project. Like, I'm bringing things to the table that makes sense. I'm like only doing things that are going to further this company. So all of that energy and all of that will come back tenfold. And that's not always the way shit happens.
Right.
And that is not the way it happened there. And so I was hurt.
Yeah. How did the hurt manifest for you?
A lot of bags of Doritos. A lot of just being down. I went into a shell for a good probably a year. I would say maybe like 14 months. I just internalized. I didn't want to be around people, partially because broke, but also because like I just didn't want to be out. And I stopped getting hit up to go out too. Like people, it's funny. People only want to be around for access sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Like, so I got it. That was really helpful because I got a chance to pare down on some of those quote unquote friendships and realize that there are people that I didn't need to be around. But I also got to see that people will reach out. People will check on you. People will be in your corner and you can't offer such, like, you can't condemn all mankind for the sake of a few folks. Like, there were, and it didn't sour me, I just want to put it like that, it didn't sour me to Nick or to the company or to doing, like, I was hurt. Like, I didn't have a vendetta. I don't hate anyone. I've seen people since. I'm like, I wave, I shake hands, we speak, it is what it is. Like, I helped to coordinate Nick on Combat Jack show in the wake of everything like being in the shits for me, and I would still be on the phone with Nick, with Combat's team, and with Reggie himself, and said about Reg that he is very persistent when he wants something, and he very much was that. Like, he would hit me to check on me. He was like, hey man, you good? Is there anything I can do? It's like, you know, I'm good. And like, he would speak to me, and he threw a couple of opportunities to, and I made some money, so thank him for that. But yeah, he would hit me for, he's like, hey, so when can this Nick Cannon episode happen? It's like, you know, I'm not there anymore. It's like, no, but you have that access. And so we did make it happen, and
yeah,
he was nice enough to shout me out in the beginning of that episode.
Yeah.
For helping to get it done.
By the way, and this is a sort of off topic, but I was just listening to Tax Stone did an interview from prison with this guy, Tahoe, and he just talked about the expectations of people who have not hit him up while he's been in jail, and I think that there is something similar in what you were saying, but it just like reminded me of that.
Yeah, absolutely. People very much feel some sort of dominion over you when the times are good and no responsibility for you when the times are bad.
Yep.
And it's something that we have, like we it's partially equating it to not wanting to be a burden and like you don't want to add on to shit, but you'd be surprised what just checking on someone can do.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot. And you know, like people, I don't think that we don't put enough of the personality or the person into personality, rather. Like we, like it's like, oh, okay, you're out and about, you're doing things, hey, let's shake hands, let's take a picture, let me shout you out on Twitter and say how much fun it was to see you. But you know, when you're quiet for 10 months, let me not check on you, let me not see how life's doing, let me not see if there's anything you need. And that's unfortunate. Like I've tried my damnedest to never be that person, but it's difficult seeing people that way. And I understand everybody goes through shit, and I never, like, if somebody's going through shit, I never hold them for saying, oh, but you didn't check on me either. Like, that's not what it's about. But it's interesting to see how people almost make it their point to be present when things are good. It was like, oh, well, you know, you were so quiet for so long. I was like, yeah, funny how life exists outside of Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't tweet or I don't post on Instagram. That doesn't mean you can't reach out.
Right.
And I think we hold so much of what we witness or what people allow us to see as what's actually going on. And that's unfortunate. So I try to, especially now, be a lot more conscious about how often I post and not doing it so often and not being so absorbed in social media except when, you know, money or entertainment is coming from it, but to not be so swallowed up, because there are people outside of it who I love dearly, who I enjoy very much, and who very much kept me alive and afloat throughout a very dark about year and a half of my life. And it's very easy to just kind of forget about that and just to put on a happy face when shit is good again. But, you know, I don't hold grudges. I'm just very aware of when people weren't. And there are people who have been fantastic. Like you guys were phenomenal. Wayno, like Hovain, Kaz, all the Cam, Low, all the Henny Palooza guys. Like so many friends were great. Fadia was remarkable. Deanna, you know, so many people were so good about like checking in and like saying, hey, are you good? Like you've been quiet. I know that it's not, but I just wanted to make sure you're okay. And like Blasta, you know, so I appreciate people who, you know, who are still people.
How do you bring it back to yourself and buy into the idea of you, Jamal, not Jamal from Incredible?
It's still going on, honestly. There are people who still, like, when I was wilding out, is preparing to shoot again. So people will, like, tag me in videos, be like, hey, Nick's looking for new cast members. I was like, hey, his number might not be the same one that I had. It is, by the way. So yeah, I'll post it on my IG story for whoever wants it. But no, I think I just had to, I had to understand what it is to be a person from, because I was 5 years and change, 5+ years if you count Universal Music Group, at Def Jam. I was 5 years with Nick. So I've anywhere I've been, especially in music business where things constantly revolving door, I've always been very much of that company and have been like, oh, that's Jamal from Def Jam. That's Jamal from Incredible. That's Nick Cannon's guy. So it had to be something where I made it a concerted point to separate myself from it and not be so much the, or not be considered so much the company man. And just had to unplug. Like it was a concerted effort at a point. Now, not so much. I feel like things are not on autopilot necessarily, but so much of what I've done, brand work that I've done that hasn't been attached to Nick, things that I've gone out and gotten for myself, whether it's Buick with the Final Four or you know, McDonald's and Hello Beautiful, like anything that I've done, even to my role at Entertainment One, like it's very much like, it's okay, this is Jamal, this is where Jamal works with this company, but it's still very much, I'm unapologetically me. Like I'm snarky, I'm fancy myself as the smartest guy in the room 8 times out of 10, and I'm always looking for smarter rooms to be in, and I don't apologize for that. Like I'm the same person in meetings, I'm the same person with Gabby Peluso that I would be with, you know, the dude on the LIRR who I don't know from a can of paint. Like that is me, that's who you get, and it's been about that. It's being unapologetically me, which is very much helped to me being unapologetically on brand at all times.
Yeah. Who are smarter people that you have been around?
Eric Rosenthal. Dan Rosenthal. There's a lot of people who are still not Jeff. Yeah, I know. You guys are certainly brilliant. I like all of my friends or anybody who I talk to on a semi-regular basis, anyone who I support, anyone who supports me, they're all people who are smarter than me in some way. And we all lend different pieces of intelligence, different sensibilities. So I'm constantly surrounded by people who are smarter, who are emotionally smarter than me, who might, you know, have more sense in one arena. So there's always, but as far as like flat out, like, are you smarter than a fifth grader shit?
Yeah, were you in the same room as Jeff Foxworthy?
A couple of times. I'm definitely smarter than Jeff Foxworthy. But no, I'm always around people who I can learn from. So I don't necessarily quantify being the smartest person in the room anymore, though from room to room, I'd still like to think that I might be one of the smartest.
What do you like about working at a label now?
That I know better. A lot of the people that I work with are relationships that I've had for several years, or they're people who know of me or who I've known via social media or having worked with them at other stops and having dealt with them in other capacities. I know enough of a label and the dealings and of what's going on to get the most out of it. So it's not, I'm excited, I'm eager to work with everyone, but I also know the sensibilities of management. I know the sensibilities of an agent, and I'm aware of more sides of it. And so that's the other thing. Like my journey has been, it's been haphazard at points, but there's nothing that I would trade my journey for at all, just because I've gotten to learn and experience so many different parts that, you know, it's brought me to where I am. And I know a great deal, but I'm also willing to learn a great deal, and I'm always very open to it. So it's been a very special special piece.
By the way, people might recognize your voice as being very loud during the Rockefeller podcast.
Oh, I mean, I'm the... Look, guys, here's the thing. And like I said, this is my fourth time. I mean, really, so I that makes it now my fifth. Yeah. Maybe my sixth. Wow. If you guys do the New York show.
Yeah.
Or the LA, this could potentially be my seventh time on the It's The Real podcast.
Legend.
And you guys are the podcast legends. I'm on the periphery. I'm Memphis Bleak. But no, like I was, yes, they might recognize me. And I got like, shout out to all the people who was like, oh, you know, this It's The Real podcast with Inf yelling in the background. Like, you know what? That's special. That's recognition that means something. You know, you guys are fantastic, man. I love what you do. I've been a fan of your work even before we became family, before we became friends. I was a fan. I've run up on people on boats. I ran up on you on a boat asking about
true. Well, not about us though. That,
no, you I ran up to on find Jeff on yeah, Frank, boat, looking for William Frank William Miller looking well, for Frank,
yeah, but
William
you were just Miller, like, where's Frank? And I'm like, do I know you?
You didn't. No, you didn't. But I knew you because I was a fan of the videos. I'd always wanted to be in an Instareel video. And yeah, like so I've known of you guys and then got to know you guys and was very much a fan of you guys.
Are you just saying this so you can get invited back?
Yeah. No. I mean, oh, I brought donuts, man. I'm definitely coming back.
Yeah, you did.
Put some skin in the game. But no, like I'm very much I love and support It's The Real and I am a fan of Eric.
Yo, Jamal, we appreciate you coming up for the
thank you for having me. Hopefully other people will be able to hear this.
Damn.
Yo, whether it's
did we talk about me getting scrapped on that first?
I think we started out the podcast with that.
Just making sure.
Listen, Jamal, congratulations on everything. Like sincerely, whether it's analytics or metrics or metaphorics, you just you have built something very special and you bounce back and you're killing it out there. So
thank you.
Thanks for coming up here.
Yeah, I greatly appreciate you guys having me. Truly, this means a lot.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, we are It's The Real, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast of ours, it's called A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Again, no apostrophe, no spaces. And if people want to find out more about our upcoming shows, including a big one that we are going to announce tomorrow, you're going to hear all about it all over the internet. Where can people go?
You can always find me at New York County Supreme Court, 60 Center Street on Foley Square in the Civic Center District of Manhattan, New
autographs?
York City.
Get autographs.
I will be there. Jury selection starts on Thursday. I will probably be on the second floor.
All right.
And hopefully I will be, selected. You can find us on itsthereal.com, ITSTHEREAL, no apostrophe, no spaces. We are also on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real, or you can go to soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time. Go stream all of our old episodes, all of our new episodes. They are also on Stitcher and all streaming services, which is also, coincidentally, where you can find all of our music.
Hey!
Go to Spotify, listen to Sugar High, our song with over 550,000 plays over there. It is also on Tidal. It is also on soundcloud.com/It's The Real. If you want to find us on Twitter, it is twitter.com/It's The Real. Also on Facebook at It's The Real and Instagram at It's The Real. If you want to find us on Snapchat, it is It's The Real, because It's The Real was taken. And we are also on Twitch. Twitch is what I was looking for. We are also on Twitch at It's The Real. It's The Real because It's The Real was taken.
Jeff, this podcast, which is doing nicely, can do double as nice, twice as nice, maybe. If you guys go and tell a friend, we know that it starts with us. We like to tell a friend to tell their friends to tell their friends to tell their friends. Let's double our audience. Jeff, who do you want to shout?
I want to shout out Skip from BK on Twitter, who has been going through and listening to all of our podcast episodes from the beginning, including episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, all the way to episode 15 right now. Skip from BK on Twitter, shout to him for doing the unthinkable and listening to all 170 episodes in a row.
In 1 month, he said.
In a month.
I, Jeff, would like to shout out Aaliyah Simone, who we ran into in real life when she was leaving the body roll party that was happening at Highline Ballroom that Young Guru and Just Blaze were DJing at, and we were just arriving. We see this pack of girls, and Aaliyah looks at us and goes, "Oh my God, it's you guys! It's The Real!" And we're like, "Hey!" And so we talked for a second, and she was like, "Guess what? Rory's inside. And we were like, oh, all right. You know. Shout out to Rory. Shout out to the whole Joe Budden podcast. But yeah, shout out to Aaliyah Simone, who was nice enough to talk with us for a few minutes, tell us that we really are putting out great content. And she's listened to, I think, just about every episode and really rocks with us. And we really appreciate that. So shout out to Aaliyah. Hopefully, whatever other parties they were on their way to, all the girls enjoyed themselves that night. We know we had a great time at the Body Roll party and got to hang out with Just and Young Guru and So Super Sam and a whole bunch of other people. Shout out to everybody over there, Annie and Kayla and Melissa. And we can't wait until the next one. As always, guys, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week. Brrrah!